Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we are live, Blog Talk Radio and the Kevin White Show. And we are brought to you by Patriot Nation Radio Network.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
That's right, the number is 347-637-3942. I got to say that slowly, because my wife has warned me to do that. So, welcome our guest, Mr. Mike Mason. Welcome to the program, Mr. Mason. I am so thrilled to have you here. And as a background story, we were stuck in Chicago, I'm sorry, in DFW. I didn't get out of there until way the next day, you know. So we spent the night at the airport. But I met him on the flight from Sacramento to DFW, and we struck up a conversation, and I found out he's an author. So that piqued my interest. And he's also he's a speaker, motivational speaker. He does things like that, and he appears on a lot of shows, including, I'll play this little clip real quick, one from GMA, which is astounding me. So we're going to present that real quick. Let's see here, share screen. And we're going to go to the window. Let me come here. Okay. Let me see here. There we go. Oh, it's going to be right here.
Quite a work history. What a resume. He started as an executive assistant director at the FBI. He later went on to become an executive at a Fortune 500 company before he finally retired last year.
It also says school bus driver. Yeah, after seeing a local news story about a shortage of school bus drivers in Virginia, he decided he wasn't quite done working yet. The career continues. Now his days consist of transporting children with autism to and from school. And he is here now. Please welcome, fresh out of retirement, Mr. Mike Mason. Mike, it is good to see you here with us. I mean, you thought you were done working, but did you ever think if you started to work again, this would be the line of work you ended up in?
I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something to help in the post-pandemic recovery. There were so many folks that had to continue working right through the pandemic, and I sort of felt like there's something else I can do. There's something else I can give.
Oh, Mike, I mean, I'm so impressed by everything you've done in your life, and I love something you said. You said that you believe the work you're doing now is just as important as the work you were doing with the FBI. How so?
No, absolutely. I mean, what could be more important in our education system? After all, at some point in time, I was a second grader. President Biden was a second grader. And if we didn't have teachers and we didn't have a good education system, we couldn't rise to do the things that we've done. So I think there's nothing more important than our education system.
More important? How about more stressful? The FBI and Fortune 500. You got to drive kids to school now. How does the stress compare in all these jobs?
Well, I told one of my coworkers, I used to think being on the SWAT team was stressful. There are days on my bus when my bus is a cacophony of noise and chaos, that I think that's a little bit stressful as well. But I love the kids, and I'm learning something from them every day. I'm trying to learn their language. What makes them happy? What makes them sad? You know, so it's a wonderful job.
And Mike, I want to point out to our viewers, you have already donated all the money you're expecting to make as a bus driver to local charities, and you are such a living example of being just the consummate member of a community and giving back in so many beautiful ways. Why do you do what you do?
Well, because so many, I'm paying homage to the people that did this thing for me. I'm just paying forward all the good fortune that I've been benefited from across my life. So I've had coaches, teachers, mentors, people who nudged me a little bit extra, people who were part of my network, part of my board of directors, if you will. And so now I'm paying it forward. And I'm grateful that I was able to donate my salary to a number of different charities. So I don't say that bragging about it, but rather grateful for how life has benefited me. And Mike Rafana, we've had stories and we have people on the show talking about this. There's a severe shortage of school bus drivers across the country, and a number of people have been stepping up. But you don't just walk in and say, hey, I'd like to be a bus driver, and they toss you the keys and your bus is out there in the parking lot. You had to go through and help us understand a little bit what you had to go through and what the training was like to be able to then get the keys to drive a school bus.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, TJ. A lot of my friends were telling me, Michael, you're going to be the most overqualified bus driver ever. And I said, no, I'm not even a qualified bus driver. So I went through about 3 weeks of training that stretched out over a couple of months because of shortages in staffing and things like that. But, yeah, you had to go, and I had to get my commercial driver's license. And so I had to pay a number of hoops to be able to get on the bus.
Michael Mason, we are truly honored to have you on the show. We hope we can have told your story, maybe inspired someone else to do the same, but we want to honor you and thank you for all that you can.
All right. That was awesome. So that says a lot. That says a lot about your career and what you came from and where you are now. But that doesn't tell us about your motivational speaker side. So can you talk a little bit about that?
The graces life has delivered upon me. And my motivational speaking is actually part of that thing forward. You know, Kevin, I've had so many good teachers, mentors, instructors, coaches, that if that kind of thing were currency, I'd be as rich as Bill Gates. If we call good mentoring, good coaching, good teaching,
yes,
good family members, again, I'd be as rich as Bill Gates. So I felt like after doing this kind of mentoring across my whole professional life, I felt like, how can I take this message out? How can I take this message on the road? And I had a lot of encouragement from those mentors who said, you know, Mike, you ought to be doing this professionally. And so I decided to go out and start doing some professional motivational speaking. And I just try to get people back in touch with how they own the reins of their own lives. I try to remind them of their why, like, for instance, why they do the jobs they do. So I've heard teachers, I've heard police officers, I've heard military officers, I've heard, you know, the people with the FBI. I've heard them say things like, I would never let my kids do this job. Well, when they say that, they're not thinking about the noble aspects of the work that they do. They went into that work for all the right reasons. It's just that administration or failure to promote or some other reason has made them almost forget why they're doing the work they're doing. And so in my talks, I try to re-elevate the work that they do, to let them know that there is no unimportant work. Every job that we do is a necessary job. Society has a way of stratifying different jobs. So, you know, my friends would say things like, again, you're going to be the most overqualified bus driver ever. Well, I wasn't even a qualified bus driver. And so there are no unimportant jobs. If you've got a flat tire on the side of the road, it's a snowy day, I bet you want to see that AAA tow truck driver.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the best heart surgeon in the world drives by you. That person can't help you, but the tow truck driver can. So the importance of a job is relative, and that's what I try to remind people. There simply are no unimportant jobs. And so again, I'm paying forward now all the good fortune that life has been so generous to bestow upon me.
So you have an incredible career, and related to that, starting in the Marine Corps, you built that up, and I'm sure that allowed you to get into the FBI. That probably had a big part in that. What did you do in the Marine Corps?
Marine Corps, in the armored vehicles, they're called Amtraks, but they're the armored vehicles that you'll see on commercials that swim ship to shore. You'll see them coming up on shore, and then they continue on their track vehicles. So I had a platoon of those. Eventually, I was an executive officer of another company, and then I went out and did recruiting, officer recruiting for about 1 year. But I loved my time in the Marine Corps. I mean, as far as leadership goes, there's no better place to learn basic tenets of leadership than in the military, and I would strongly encourage any young man or young woman who is thinking about that, to certainly consider pursuing a career. However long, I knew I wasn't going to retire from the military because I had other plans. But I owe a lot to the Marine Corps to this day and don't regret one minute of the time I spent before.
And you're always a Marine. I know that from all my Marine friends. You know.
Absolutely.
So after, yes, I know y'all are proud. You're really proud. So after that, then you went to the FBI and you worked for, tell us who you worked for, who the boss was. Who was the boss of the FBI when you were there? People probably know.
Well, I worked for William Webster, and a lot of the younger people won't know.
Okay, right.
Was Louis Free.
Interesting, yeah.
So, Bill Sessions, I was trying to think of the name. Bill Sessions,
yes.
Director after Webster, then came Louis Free, and then came Bob Mueller. So across the expanse of my career, I worked for four different directors, but I actually worked closest with Bob Mueller. The other directors, I was several levels below.
Okay.
Them, and so didn't really work with them on a daily basis, but Bob Mueller, I worked with when I was an executive assistant director. We had meetings with him every day.
So what did you do? What kind of jobs did you do while you're with the FBI? Because a lot of people are very curious. This is a very, cliche kind of thing. What does the FBI do? And I know you see the FBI today and how they're operating. So what kind of things did you do?
Well, as an agent, I started out doing some drug undercover work. This was then when the FBI had just gotten concurrent jurisdiction with the Drug Enforcement Administration for drug work. And so I did that work my first 2 or 3 years in the FBI. And I have to say, the Bureau is a lot more sophisticated today in how they prepare people for undercover roles. I mean, I was thrust into various undercover roles basically because I was black and I was from the south side of Chicago. But I really had more in common with my fellow agents than I did with drug dealers that I was eventually pursuing. And my drug work was not, I don't want to blow it up, it's larger than life. It wasn't like the drug work being done in offices like Miami and Los Angeles. I was in a small resident agency, and I mean, a 2-kilo deal was a big deal. Well, that doesn't even get anybody's attention in Miami. Nevertheless, the risks are still the same. The things you had to learn, sometimes on the fly, were the same. Today, when an agent accepts an undercover role, they are thoroughly trained. They go through psychological screening for a couple of weeks, and then they go through weeks of additional training. So when they get into that environment, whatever they didn't know about the drug world, they get a lot more of that education from the academy these days. So it's a lot more sophisticated program in terms of the backstopping they do for your identification, and just a whole host of things that weren't done. We were really flying by the seat of our pants when I was doing that work. Then I did general criminal work, did a lot of bank robberies, things of that nature, bank robberies, kidnappings, that kind of work. But, I mean, I was excited every day coming to work as an agent. Then I eventually became a supervisor, went from that to becoming an assistant special agent in charge, to then a special agent in charge in the Sacramento field office, and I was the assistant director in charge of the Washington field office, which is the FBI's second largest office. So after that, I went and became an executive assistant director, where I was responsible for approximately one half of the FBI's operational resources. So, I mean, I had a career that I dreamed about as a seventh grader, and when I retired, I told folks that I had dreamed about it from the time I was in seventh grade, but the reality was better than anything I ever dreamed about. And I really do sincerely feel that way, even to this day.
So I see a theme here. You start somewhere and you work your way to the top. You're getting to positions, executive positions. And I think your leadership as a Marine officer helped a lot with that too. Because you see the big picture when you're an officer and you have people under you. So it looks like you did that in the FBI, doing the drug thing and then criminal, and then next thing you know, you're an assistant this or you're some kind of director. I think that's fantastic. So you excel in the job, in the place. You're not staying in one place. I think that's fantastic. And that's for to me, that's very motivational. You know, that's something that people have to think about. You do your job doesn't mean you're going to be in that job forever. So I like how that works. And then your next job, was I was blown away when you worked at Verizon. You didn't sell phones on the floor. You started pretty high. So could you explain, could you tell us?
There were one of the things you said, going back to I really think as far as leadership goes, before I even earned my recognition, the kind of leadership traits you learn, these were all officers go, it's like the officer's boot camp.
Right.
The lessons I learned in leadership there served me well throughout my entire professional career. Now, you get a little bit more sophisticated, but the basic tenets of leadership, like you look out for your people first, that's something that stuck with me throughout. So I think regardless of the fact that where I learned most of those basic tenets of leadership were in the Marine Corps, that stuff is applicable throughout your professional life.
I agree.
One of the things I say about the places that I rose to in my career was I always had a plan. I had an idea of where I wanted to go. You have to see yourself in that leadership position in order to achieve it. And I guess I never put any artificial constraints on myself. I was willing to see just how far my work could take me. And that's why I tell young people today, I had one mentee who told me he was working for a particular company, working in a job that he thought was less than what he was capable of doing, and he told me how he really hated his job. And one of the things I said to him was, there are only two people in this world who need to know that. You, and since you told me, now me. Because nobody else needs to know about that. You need to work in that job like it's your dream job. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you hate it.
Right.
Because the next job you get, the first place they're going to go looking for a recommendation is the last place. It's your work. So
right.
I always tell people that the Marines didn't teach me to work hard. Neither did the FBI nor Verizon, where I eventually ended up. I worked hard for me, for the things I wanted to achieve.
Right.
So they happen to be the beneficiaries of my work ethic, and that's what I try to tell young people. Don't set artificial limits on yourself.
I love that. That's great. Yeah, I understand that, being a former military guy. I totally get it. I mean, take care of your people first. I always said, I work for you, for the guys that work for me. To give them what they need to be successful.
You need to understand that. I used to think every week when I was a boss, and I've been a boss for most of my working life, I've been some type of boss or another, but I used to sit back on Fridays and say, do I deserve this role? So I didn't think of it as a position of benefit. I thought of it as a position of obligation. That's how I always thought of it. I wanted to make sure I was working hard every day to earn the respect of my people.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. So tell us how you got into Verizon. And I want to say little things first. Is it because you're at the FBI that Verizon accepted you more readily? Or is it because, how did you get into that position?
Well, most FBI, Secret Service, DEA, police departments, those networks exist out there. And I was actually recruited by Verizon.
They
gave me a call and told me that they understood that I was looking for other opportunities. Well, you better believe that's because of a couple of dots that were out there that somebody talked to somebody who talked to somebody else who said, hey, I know Mason is available. So when you're reaching that point, when you're about to switch careers or you're looking to get into something, it's really important to have a strong network. And it's important to develop and nurture that network from your first day on the job. Not just 2 weeks before you retire, because that's not going to work. You want to establish yourself, establish your reputation early. So anybody who has anything to say about you, it's going to be something good. And I think that that's really, really critically important. I was surprised. I had no idea that Verizon was looking for a chief security officer, and I started as a vice president, was eventually promoted to senior vice president. I had no idea that they were in the market for backfilling that position until they reached out to me. So that was Providence, you know. So I think that it pays to have a good, active network and to, again, develop and nurture that network all along your career. You never know who's going to be the person to reach down and pull you up. You never know who that's going to be.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's always good. You have a lot of friends and professional people. And that sounds fantastic. So tell us about what you did there at Verizon. This is pretty fantastic.
Well, again, to go back to one thing you said about who you have in your network, that's really up and down.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies, before they recruit you, they'll talk to your subordinates, not just your peers,
okay. Yeah.
They'll talk to your subordinates. And so to me, I'm a people person,
yeah.
And I believe in treating people well. I don't want to have to come and tell you, if they're going to call one of my people, I don't want to have to give them a heads-up call.
Yeah.
And they're going to tell you, because I try to treat people right across my entire career. I try to respect all people, not just some people. Let me go back a minute to talk about when I retired from the FBI.
Okay, yes.
On that day, besides my service to my country, my service to the Bureau, service to citizens of this country, I was very proud that my retirement was attended by mechanics, painters, not only the director of the FBI and lots of other suits, but it was attended by painters, mechanics, plumbers, carpenters, food service people, and custodians. And they were in the clothes they came to work in every day, and that was fine. Because, again, none of it works without all of it working. You know, you can't win a baseball game if you have a left fielder and center fielder who are out there having cokes and not paying attention. It doesn't work unless all nine players work. Well, in the FBI, it doesn't work unless all 40,000 people are working together. The way I look at it, that's my worldview on that. And then when I got to Verizon was different because Verizon had entities all over the world, and security was really broken up into different components within the company. So one of the things I tried to do, one thing I'm proud of, is bringing all elements of security under one roof. But again, whether you work for a company like Verizon or GE or Ford or Zenith or whatever, you're going to have those opportunities to take those skill sets that you've learned in job one to job two to job three. The thing I say in my motivational presentations is my last charge to the audience is you have to continue to evolve. You have to continue to learn new skills. You have to continue. A lot of people don't like public speaking. But guess what? If you're going to rise up in a company, you're going to rise up in a nonprofit, in an academic institution, wherever you are, you're going to have to get comfortable speaking to people. So what that means is getting comfortable with something that might not come naturally to you. Some people will tell me after I speak, oh, you're just a natural speaker. There's no such thing. There is no such thing. And I work on this skill. I work on it every time I go up on the stage. Every time I go up on the stage, I don't assume that I'm going to be good. I practice, I rehearse, I look at my materials, I think about the points I want to make. What I guess I'm saying is I apply myself.
Right.
That's what young people have to do. They have to apply themselves. They have to see themselves in senior leadership roles. There's no reason why they shouldn't aspire to run the FBI or run a company like Verizon one day.
Absolutely. I like what you're saying. And I see that. You sound like your career kind of sounds like mine. You know, one thing leads to the other, and you got to realize, hey, I learned so much from this job. I can bring it to this job, and you can make that job better having that insight. And I can see that happening. Yeah. So tell us, okay, your motivational speaking. So you speak in front of big crowds probably, and you're also an author. So you probably bring your books to your speeches, and.
I don't.
You don't.
But okay. I show the book because that's just a logistical
thing. Yeah.
I don't want to
try go.
Five books or something and then I'm going to get rid of 100 of them and have to deal with getting
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Tell people how they can, you know, go on Amazon, get my book. And what I'm hoping for, is that my talk generates enough interest that people want to have more, that they want to see the book. So I try to put a lot of energy into my presentation. I never stand behind the podium. I always have a lapel mic.
Right. Yes.
But, Kevin, more than anything, I want to connect to the audience. So I want to make sure that my presentation stays relevant. The presentation I gave 5 years ago, I don't give today.
Wow.
So I take current events, things like that. But I try to, I'm a picture guy. I'm a storyteller. So I try to make my points through telling stories.
Right. So what is the name of your book?
The name of my book is Working in America, and then the subtitle is Spectator or Gladiator, You Decide. And that's really, I love that title, because what I'm telling people is you make the decision about how much you're going to engage in your career. You make the decision about how far you want to go in your career, what educational credentials you're going to bring to the table. All of those things are yours. There are a lot of people who hold giant pity parties for where they are in life as if they have no accountability for that. And I think that all of us own the account. I'm accountable for Mike Mason's life. Nobody else is. Nobody else is. And I might win this fight and lose this fight, but what you're not going to do, and I talk about this in my presentation, you're never going to get me to curl up in a fetal position and just be a victim. I'm not
going to
be anybody's victim. I just don't have time for that.
I love that. I love this talk. It's very motivating. I enjoy that. So at Verizon, so you took care of security. You're the VP of, is that right? Of security. So what did that entail? Because I'm trying to figure that out.
Right. Well, Chief Security Officer, I'm the Senior Vice President, for a worldwide company that has presence in many, many different places around the world, and I was responsible for physical security, cyber security, security for our personnel, and just coming up with creative ideas for how we manage security in different environments. So you can go from a store to a store which may have 20 employees, to a facility that may have 5,000 employees, and you have to deal with different people in terms of working as a security chief security officer. You also have to deal with different people in your own organization. How are they motivated? You know, my job wasn't to know how to do everything in security. I don't have any particular, I'm not an IT guy. I have no particular cyber skills. My job was to figure out how to leverage all of those resources for the greatest output possible. So, you know, this little black kid from the south side of Chicago ended up doing some big things, but it all had to do with, first of all, good luck. You know, good luck. If you're religious, people might say you're blessed. That's not my particular swim lane, but I know how fortunate I've been. When I talked, when we first started this podcast, this episode, I talked about the mentors and coaches and teachers and neighbors that I had, the village that raised me. And, Kevin, I will be forever grateful for those folks because they're the reason that I was able to do the things in my life I've done so far and things I plan to continue to do. You know, I'm not driving the bus today. I volunteer for the Red Cross, or I drive blood products from our lab in Richmond.
Wow.
Central Virginia. And I always want to do that. I always want to give back a little bit of myself because, again, I'm a very, very fortunate guy. Yes, I've worked hard. I worked hard in college. I was trying to be a good student. So I applied myself, but I would be fooling myself if I said I've been able to do all of this on my own. You know, you and I think you would agree, have stood on the shoulders of many who came before us.
Yes, sir.
Well, we weren't always treated well in the military.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So I know I stand here on the shoulders of many people who came before us. So I feel like we owe it to the generation following us
to do exactly the same thing, to try to lift people up.
Absolutely. And I have those talks with young men, young black men, or it doesn't matter what color they are. I have these talks. Sometimes things aren't encouraged that should be encouraged in certain communities, and that's where I like to say, hey, this, you got so many opportunities you can do with your life. So you got so many options, and people don't tell anybody that. So young people need to know that, especially these days. They need to know that.
And you know, they need to know you're going to face obstacles.
Yes.
You know, Verizon had a thing that they did a few years ago. It was called Minority Male Makers. And it was about bringing young kids, mostly of color, into an environment where you could teach them something about technical programs. And I gave the graduation once. And I was talking to these students and telling them how they could, you know, achieve. And then I had one of the people were all over the summer, and different colleges would give us the space to hold these classes. And I had a counselor say, Mr. Mason, you can't be telling these kids that all they have to do is work hard and they'll achieve success, that there are no other obstacles in their way. And Kevin, this is a true story.
Oh, boy.
I asked the kids, they were mostly 11, 12, 13-year-olds. I asked the kids, I said, how many of you played football? And half the room raised their hand. Then I said, how many of you played the position of running back? And then fewer number raised their hand. But I looked for the youngest kid that played running back. And I said, let me ask you something. I said, when you get that football, what do the other 11 players on the other side of the line, what do they want to do? He said, well, they want to tackle me. They want to stop me from reaching my goal. And then I said, okay, well, when they're coming at you, do you curl up in a fetal position? He said, no. I said, do you run the other way? I said, no. I said, do you run up in the stands? He said, no. And then I said, well, tell me, what do you do? And I could have hugged him for this answer because it was completely unrehearsed. He said, they just make me work harder to reach the
goal. Oh, man. I love it.
Man, I looked at that 18-year-old kid, and I said, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I said, that's a perfect metaphor for life. No, man, everybody's not going to hurt the waters and just hand you a good job.
Absolutely.
Promotions. No. You've got to work for that stuff. That was a great answer by that young kid. 11 years old, that's what he said.
That's incredible. And so that fits together. Perfect. And that's the philosophy. And the people, I'm sure they saw that, they got it. And they probably remember it forever because that's what it's about. That's it. Just nailed it.
It's a lot simpler than we make it sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes, there will be people who are going to try to talk. There are going to be all kinds of people.
Right, right.
All kinds who are not going to try to lift you up. Bosses out there. They have to always be the sharpest pencil in the box and are afraid of raising the talent level in your own organization. Not me, man. If I have working for me, that's just a force multiplier.
Yeah.
Those are a lot of smart people. I've sat in hundreds of conference rooms and hundreds of meetings, and I've never considered myself necessarily the smartest person in that room. Now, with my team, with subordinates, it doesn't matter. Everybody brings something different to the table. My job, and any effective leader's job, is to find out what those special things are and promote them bringing those talents.
Yeah. Everybody wins that way. Everybody wins that way. People want to keep their own. I work with guys who kept their own knowledge. You know, they didn't share with anybody. It doesn't help the team. So I totally agree. So what?
Yes. Is the smarter your team, the more empowered your team,
yes,
the better your outfit is going to do and the better it's going to look for you.
Absolutely.
It isn't what looking good for me isn't necessarily what motivates me, but I realize if my, listen, a team that wins the World Series, guess what? Look at all the accolades the manager gets. Did he step out on that field once?
No. No.
The whole time. He knows how to be an effective team. He knows how to motivate that team. When you have the best team, you have the best shortstop, best right fielder, best catcher, best pitcher, guess what? You can't help but have the best team.
Yes. So right.
That's what I
led. I'm not afraid of having somebody at the table who on a particular subject is smarter than me, has
right.
more knowledge than me. Man, that's just another tool in my tool chest.
That's right. You got it. That's perfect. So one quick nuance I want to discuss is going from government to Verizon. That's, you're going from government to the public sector, private sector. I thought that was different to you. Did you have to learn that? Or?
It is different in some ways. But you can talk about the administrative part of it. Like it's easier to fire people in the private sector, things like that. The reality is I don't like to focus on the negative.
Yeah.
In terms of getting people to want to come to work, getting people to want to work for you, getting people to put their best foot forward, professional life is no different at Marine Corps to driving a bus. I mean, if I was leading, I wasn't in a leadership role when I was driving a bus, but I see that it's the same thing. People want to be recognized. People want to be heard if they have a complaint. If people are talking about the job, there's a new way we're going to do business, well, make sure you incorporate the opinions of those who
actually
work.
Yes, exactly. Totally agree. Totally. That makes so much sense. And you're not going to know everything. You can't just put stuff. You got to listen to the people.
Job.
Right. Right.
Push away a certain type of technology. They weren't familiar with the technology.
Yeah.
If my team can take that technology and put up some good stuff, let's go for it.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's.
I just try to get everybody to self-actualize. Because how can you not have the best team possible if everybody feels empowered? Everybody feels like they have an opinion. So, for example, to practice what I preach, if I invited 10 people to a conference room for a meeting, Kevin, I didn't invite them because I wanted 5 on this side of the table and 5 on this side of the table.
Yeah.
I invited them because all 10 of them bring something of value to that meeting. And I want them to know that. And I want to hear their opinions because it matters to me. It matters to our goals and objectives. That's what I want to do. I want to get people to where I hope most people can feel about their careers one day the way I feel about my whole professional life. I loved it, man. I was having a good time. Yeah, I went through hard times. I went through sad times.
Yeah.
Some angry times. But on the whole, oh, man, I wouldn't trade my professional life with anyone.
That is so good to hear. I love hearing that. And you got to enjoy what you're doing. You got to bring the best to the table. It sounds like you've done that over and over again. And you started at a difficult level. A Marine Corps as an officer is no joke. I mean, that's pretty difficult. And you're dealing with your grunts and your people, and you got to bring them together as a team. And then it's fantastic.
Some of my senior NCOs were going to be 5, 6, 7, 8 years older than me. I didn't know all the various hats you have to wear as an officer. So sometimes it doesn't add. Add for people that you might only be 2 years older than. But don't confuse age with experience.
Yes, that's correct.
Certainly, my level of sophistication was superior to the average of my troops who are my age.
Right.
I've been to college. I've traveled a little bit. A lot of these guys come from little small towns and they really don't have a lot of life's experiences. Like, for instance, I had a guy buy all his furniture on credit, but then the furniture started to come apart and he thought that was good enough reason to stop paying for it.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And after him, they knew he was a Marine, so they knew where to come, you know, to settle up. What they needed to settle.
Right.
So young troops don't suffer from a lack of intelligence. They suffer from a lack of sophistication. And the same with young employees. So all of the environments in which I've led, the basic tenets of leadership are the same from each one. There's nothing different. How you apply it is a little bit different. And, you know, the average Marine can't just put his rank insignia on the table and walk out. Well, the average employee in the private sector can do that.
Yes, right.
So there's differences like that, but they're really nuanced differences. As far as leading effective organizations, I found that what I learned at both CS and the Marine Corps served me well throughout my professional life.
That's fantastic.
Continues,
and so, and you're still doing things. You're still working. You're still speaking, and I don't know. You're still an author, and I don't know if you're going to do any more books or not. But you're still doing your thing, and you're sharing this. This is the biggest thing on this interview is what you learn, you share, and you bring it to people to affect their lives. And so, not everybody has this vision. A lot of people are selfish out there. A lot of bosses are. But, yeah, you're bringing the team together so the whole team wins. Everybody wins. And whatever your unit wins.
One thing I say to the older members of your office, years old, I feel like I'm on Chapter 9 with Mike Mason. I'm on Chapter 9 of a 15-chapter book.
Yeah.
I am not done.
Right.
It's not like if my life is a commercial airliner, ready to say, folks, put your trays up.
Right.
We're still flying at 40,000 feet.
Right.
My lust for life is no different than when I walked across the stage and got my college degree. I earned my Marine Corps commission. For any other time, you got to get excited about this thing called life. I think that's one of the messages I take in my motivational presentations are, you've got to get, if you're not pumped up about this life, I don't know how to get you there. So I try to tell people, again, I try to make points by telling stories, and hopefully that will resonate with people, particularly people who aren't happy with what they're doing. Because the first question I ask is, what are you doing about doing something different?
Yeah.
People want to say, well, I can't just leave my job tomorrow. I've got to work. Leave your job.
Right. Yeah.
How are you planning? What are you thinking about? Or are you just going to wake up 35 years later, hating the job across all those 35 years, and just be glad you can retire and go look at reruns of Gilligan's Island? That's got to be about more than that.
Yeah. 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 I see that. That's fantastic, Gilligan's Island. And it just came right out of your mouth. So, I mean, as far as like, you got a lot of things in your head. That's brilliant. I like that. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. So if you have to go, I know you got other things to do. We're at the 7:45 mark almost. You've been fantastic. You got anything else to say? Yeah, go right ahead, sir.
I'd just like to tell you, thank you so much for the show, and I hope my words will resonate with some members of your audience. I just think this thing called my life is just that. My life. Let me do, I close with one thing that I believe, because I believe attitude is so important. Attitude is the most important ingredient to the success of anybody's life as far as I'm concerned. And I read something that a pastor had written, and I read this many, many years ago and have fully embraced it. And he said, life is 10% what happens to how I respond.
Yeah.
And I believe that for any situation.
Yes, sir.
If you just lost a parent, if you just learned you've got some kind of disease, okay, is it going to define your life? Is the passing of a relative going to define your life? And I would say the answer is no. I had a very, when my father died, I was sad. I smiled through my tears because I talked to him recently. We had a road trip recently. That's all about attitude. So to me, I try to wake up every day with a very, very positive attitude, and that's something I would recommend for your entire audience.
Awesome. Mr. Mike Mason, everybody, it's been fantastic. Very, I can see why you're a motivational speaker. I can see it coming out of you here and there. So let me see, I'm going to show this. Mr. Timothy Mock, listen, thank you. Very inspiring. Favorite part was towards the beginning when you emphasized how every job is important. That is fantastic. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it. I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave that there. But thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming on, and you're welcome on any other time. If you want to promote your book or do other things and talk more in depth, you can do that as well when you have more time. But I'll let you go, and thank you very much for being a part of the show tonight. Oh, you're welcome, and I'll get you this copy soon. Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
All right, see ya. You too, sir. All right. My goodness, that was awesome. Mr. Mike Mason, I can't believe all the things, positions he's had all the way through his career and how he builds up. And I like that theory. You always learn from your last job. Even when I worked at Enterprise Rental Car, I learned a lot, logistics and all that. So anybody can learn and learn over and over again. And that's it for the show tonight. Be back next week. I'm fully recovered from my airplane disaster trip, so I think I am. But thanks, everybody, for watching, for listening, and I hope more people will watch this later. And if I can learn, you can learn this stuff from anybody or anything that happens. This guy is fantastic. So remember, Mr. Mike Mays, an FBI agent to Verizon Vice President of Security. That's incredible. Worked for Mr. Mueller. Great guy. It's nice to meet him in person, which makes a big difference to do that. So, and we sat right next to each other on the aircraft to Dallas. It was fantastic. So we had a really good conversation. But anyway, that's the end of the show tonight, and I enjoy doing this. And this is Simulcast with the radio program from Blog Talk, Patriot Nation Radio, and we're signing off. Good night, Patriot Nation. Yeah.